Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. I would like to thank Peachtree Government Relations, Chiringa, Solomon Brothers, and Evans General Contractors for being a part of the show in 2023. My guest today is Atlanta Journal and Constitution, or now we just call it the AJC, columnist Bill Torpy. Bill, welcome in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. I have read your columns for years, and Brian Robinson, who I know you have met at some point. I always like to give credit when I meet somebody along the way.
Right.
Was kind enough to put us in touch during the election cycle as you were writing article or op-ed or where it came unglued for Herschel Walker. And I was like, man, I've read your stuff for years. I'd love to have you on the show and learn about all the people who create your perspective. So thanks for making time for me, Bill.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you talking to me when I was writing about Herschel. I think it was called the Mess Express. It was.
And as everybody has since told me after they get out of their non-disclosure agreement periods from inside the campaign, they were like, man, you were right. It looked like a dumpster fire, and we couldn't friends with a lot of the people who ran his race, but you can't part with all the details of the misfortunes of your clients or anything. And I was like, I didn't really need you guys to offer an opinion to pay attention to what was going on. So.
Yeah, no, I think you were calling it months ahead of time, or you were saying it publicly because everyone kind of knew it.
But. And I don't understand why one of the things that you learn in political circles, if you speak out against the team, you can become persona non grata early.
Right.
I don't know that I like Charles Barkley. I've told Ella Dorsey this, who is at Atlanta News First. I was like, I like Charles Barkley because even if he's dead wrong, he tells you what he thinks.
Right.
He's clearly made an awesome career for himself out of telling people what he thinks with his sense of humor. So it's hard to say that there's not a marketplace for that.
No, he's never wrong, you know, and he's never without an opinion, and he's always good to watch.
Bill, talk to me. You've been a household name to people who read the AJC for many years. Where did you grow up?
I'm from Chicago, the south side of Chicago. It's a good place to grow up because you kind of learn the ropes pretty quickly. If you're taking the L when you're a kid, you get to figure out people pretty well.
Head on a swivel?
It's kind of that way. I lost money when I was like, I think still in grade school when I was trying to beat the guy with the three caps with the P in underneath one of them. And I watched him and saw him do the sleight of hand, and I figured it out, and I put my $5 down, which would be like 150 now to me, and I'm sure I got him, and then boop, it was nothing under it.
But fat cats always get theirs.
I was on the other side of it.
Where did you go to school, college, education, discover that you enjoyed journalism?
Well, I went through Catholic schools in Chicago, and then went to Southern Illinois University.
You're a Saluki?
Saluki, yeah. So you're one of the few people who actually knows that. Yeah, we're the
Carbondale. I know Carbondale.
Yeah,
Illinois.
We're the home of Clyde Frazier from the Knicks, and also Sipowicz from NYPD Blue. Two of the iconic New Yorkers are actually Illinoisans. It was a good place to go, and as far as learning about journalism, I had to get a major in something, right? And accounting seemed boring, and engineering seemed hard. As Bobby Knight says, I learned how to write when I was in second grade, and then I went on to other stuff. Well, apparently I never went on to other stuff because it just seemed like an interesting, fun profession. And I always read papers when I was a kid. You know, I was like on my bike, my Schwinn Stingray, delivering the now defunct Daily News in Chicago, and then work my way up to the Tribune, which was like the good one.
And it's changed hands a time or two, the paper, correct?
Oh, the Trib?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a dumpster fire. It was like the gold standard of journalism. You know, I mean, it was one of the
big national papers.
The big gray old lady. Yeah, they've been bought two or three times. As the whole industry has kind of taken it on the chops, but they've taken it on the chops more times than most.
How do you find your way down south?
I came here. I was visiting some friends. I just threw my resume together and sent a couple clips, and it was kind of a lark. Actually, I was at a paper in Chicago, kind of a medium-sized one, and it's basically the South Side's newspaper. So I thought I'd come down here. I sent my resume ahead, dropped in at the paper. It was, I thought I'd stay here 3 or 4 years, and I always wanted to get back to the Tribune, right? So that was kind of like, my goal.
Things change.
Yeah, I was going to be here for 3 years, and that was 30 years ago. So there you go.
Would you ever go back?
Nah.
No?
I mean, I
the weather's hard?
I love it. Weather is not friendly. I was just back there, for a funeral that my mom, that was last 2 weeks ago. It was actually great to be back there. I was surrounded by family, friends. A retired police officer was playing the bagpipes, so it was kind of that sense of tradition, old culture that I do miss a lot of that.
Sure, it's not here, not in that way.
No, right. And just walking on the lakefront and having an Italian beef, that kind of stuff. But on the other hand, Atlanta is a good place to lay down roots.
My biggest criticism of Chicago is not February, because everybody knows if you go in February, it's cold. My biggest criticism of Chicago is that on Memorial Day, there's still a decent chance that it's 55 degrees outside.
Oh yeah, I've thrown a snowball at a White Sox game.
Yeah, you get a lot of people that love to talk about the north side of Chicago. You're the first person I've had that likes to rep the south side. That's interesting.
Yeah.
One of the things that you do, you write a weekly column for the AJC.
Two a week, sometimes three.
Well, I like the Sunday. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it publishes a little earlier on the website. I'm not sure if there's anything to that. But talk about how you've carved out the niche that you have, because we'll get into the, you love to cover the subsidies.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to save that for next, because I think that's a much more interesting conversation that we'll probably see in different ways. Talk about having the freedom and the ability and how you carve the niche to really write the opinion pieces with the freedom that they seem to give you.
Yeah, they let me write about anything. I have not been told not to write about anything ever. I've not been told to write about something ever. A couple times there have been suggestions from editors, hey, this be an interesting subject. They're doing that to help me out because, I'm always trying to push the rock up the hill. Right. Every Monday I'm like, oh, God, I got to come up with something. Right. I like to say being a columnist is like being married to a nymphomaniac. It's great at the beginning, but then you got to keep doing it. I've covered a lot of different things at the paper for many years. I've been here a long time, since 1990, covered different counties. I was in Cobb and DeKalb and Gwinnett and down at City Hall. And for many years, I was like the Sunday guy. So I was just kind of jumping around everybody's beat. And so that's where I kind of learned where everything is, which then allows me to kind of jump in and out of different stuff.
Do you come into that every week? Do you sometimes know what you want to write about 2 or 3 weeks from now based on the situation? I imagine that Herschel Walker article rattled around in your brain a little bit for a little while, because
you
watched it for a year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I kind of, I knew I'd be writing something about Herschel at one point or another. I think I wrote maybe two. We have a good battery of people that cover that all the time, Patricia Murphy and Bluestein. And so
I'm still trying to get Patricia. Greg will come on whenever.
Oh, Greg, you can't keep him away. I try not to write about what they're writing about. And I always kind of come from it as like sort of a dumb guy's point of view, right? I'm just
an objective guy who happens to be watching the room.
I'm just there, you know, and they are good at, you know, the nuances and everything. A lot of times I just blunder about and come up with stuff. But anyway, yeah, it is a good gig. It has allowed me to. I was writing about the DeKalb County schools and the cities feuding about ticket money for the cameras, those speed cameras.
Oh man!
And then today I got a call about the Cobb County and some of the nonsense going on there. So it's, you know, there is a lot of stuff jump in and out of.
I sat in elected office on the Alpharetta City Council for 4 years, mm-hmm. and I was the one guy who voted against those. And right. It was like, why don't you want to keep kids safe? And I was like, well, how many kids have been killed by a car before school zones? Like, why can we not park somebody out here? I will always, and I've had people that voted in favor of them come to me down the road and be like, you know, if I had to do that again, you were right. To me, that is, why do you want to surveil law-abiding citizens?
Well, you see, in fact, oddly enough, while I was researching it, I came across the Alpharetta story about it because I was looking at different stuff and I saw, and I thought, wow, there's one guy who voted against it. I wonder who that nut is. But no, I
still have people email me every single month asking me why.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing, and as my story today said, you know, it's about the kids. You know, and then when you hear someone say it's about the kids, I say,
nope, you lose me.
You got to hang on to your wallet when someone's telling you that.
It is. I will never. To me, it's the conversation. If when you start down that road, I work by day with security contractors, critical infrastructure that of things that affect the daily lives of the security of this country.
Right.
Your police departments do not have those resources. To me, it is a data sensitivity. The one criticism that I would ever offer law enforcement is that they, in every municipality and county, they yield an unbelievable amount of power.
Right.
And I don't say that in a bad way or like you would think. I think if the police chief comes in front of your county commission or your city council with a stance on an issue and you disagree with him, it is very easy for it to be written about you as an elected official that you do not support the cops.
You're soft on crime.
You're soft on crime. Yeah, 100%. And to me, they are the most powerful, I won't say special interest group in the country. They certainly are to local governments and they sit inside local governments. And to be honest with you, they complain about taking a shit.
Well, part of the whole thing is, and I get the
and I
idea.
Love, and I love cops, but
right.
I'm right.
No, right. So I have my misgivings about it, and because there's a couple thoughts. One is it's kind of the nose in the of the camel in the tent.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
It's, oh, hey, you know, it's about the kids. We want to protect them near school zones. And everybody does, right?
They're things no one can fundamentally disagree
right.
with.
So, and then, well, why not put them in front of nursing? But then why not put them in front of stores? Because people are coming and going from stores. And next thing you know, they're all over the place. And in fact, my son lives in Washington, D.C.
Oh, they have facial recognition.
And they have, and they also have them all over the place. I think it's Rock Creek Parkway.
Yeah, and it's not safe.
Well, Rock Creek Parkway is built like a little highway, right? I mean, it's impossible to not go 35 or 40 miles an hour. And I think he's gotten a ticket just driving normally, and I think that was probably, you know, 30-something miles an hour. And I think it's, you know, that's the issue is that one day, you know, that will break loose, and then, you know,
I've said it. It is the intentions are not bad. There was not police chief or a lieutenant or anybody that I ever, and since I have left elected office, they will call me every once in a while if there's something that they're looking at just based on some of the things I do, know, and have. It's like, hey, can you look at this like one off, just a look? Right. Tell us the questions that we're not going to be able to ask ourselves. And when you look, then after you get to that, you get, because we got to protect the kids, right?
Right.
Surveillance areas, certain parts of town. Well, I don't have to tell. I can't go through experiences in every city. if Alpharetta, Georgia isn't safe, nowhere in America is safe.
Right.
And so I was like, what are we protecting them from? Like, do we have just a slew of kids who get hit by cars going to school? Well, no. It was a total cash grab. And the problem with that law is that that money can be collected and spent in very few ways.
Right.
And one of the ways that it can be spent is on toys for law enforcement.
Right.
Well, of course they're going to be in favor.
It's for police and, quote, public safety.
Correct.
And also, I mean, it's a fundamental thing, as I said in my column, is that Americans like the speed and they like a live flesh and blood law enforcement officer to try and catch them. You know, it's kind of almost sneaky to have the red light cameras doing it.
But the thing that I would change on the law, which I would vote against, the thing that I would change is that, you know who else? It's not a crime fits the punishment kind of thing. There's no points on your license. I get it. But the thing that if a school teacher going to school drives from Forsyth into Fulton and gets those things, I mean, those people don't make a lot of money.
Right.
And so to me, on some level, it is a little bit, should you speed through school zones? We will both agree that you should not.
No.
But it can be punitive to varying degrees based on who it is. My overarching problem with the school zone cameras is not the school zone cameras for school zone hours. It's the other 20 hours a day that they monitor everything, everybody who goes past 24 hours a day. And do they solve crime? Yes. If somebody has a warrant out for their arrest, does it notify local law enforcement? Yes. Is that 99% of the people who drive past a license plate reader? No.
No.
I don't.
Well, I think, for instance, Brookhaven, I think they have them all over the place. They have, I remember writing about this maybe 4 years ago. They had a couple dozen cameras. And I guarantee you in the years since, the facial recognition, the tag reading ability, the collection of data, the sorting it out has all gotten better, right? Every year.
Of course.
Everything gets...
The technology improves.
Right.
No question.
And I suppose, you know, being, you know, anywhere you go now, it's almost expected that you're going to be on camera. You know, if you're going, I'm sure I've been on camera 6 times since I walked from the parking lot to the building here. And, you know, there's something, you know, a lot of people are like, well, what do you have to hide?
Yeah, of course. Well, what did you want to see?
Right.
Nobody ever asked that question.
Well, and I always say when people say, well, what do you have to hide? Why do you worry about your car tag being shot and recorded or your facial recognition being captured while you're walking down Peachtree? And what do you got to hide? And I'm like, well, if Walmart wanted to strip search people out walking out of the place or even pat them down, they would catch a lot more shoplifters. You know?
Absolutely.
But, you know, I don't want to be patted down outside.
Well, it's not, to me, the conversation. There are a lot of really inconvenient things about the Bill of Rights. Like, you have a right to bear arms. You have a right to the First Amendment. That's not to protect things that you want to necessarily hear.
Right.
That's not to our conversations and issues with things that people have about 1, 2, 4, 10 states' rights. There are a ton of issues. But the thing that I can read your articles and tell, not necessarily your political leanings, and I think that that is a compliment, but you definitely have, from an objective, liberty-loving streak, even if you may be to the left of me, and I think that it's funny when you find the people that like the issues of liberty or to write about them or the misgivings, not really anything specific, because I might be very, very, very far right on how I vote politically, and you might be, and I'm not saying you are, you might be very left, but I always love the members of Congress or the members in a general assembly who have the liberty streak, because they make up this island of misfit toys, and
right.
they agree on almost nothing from a policy wise, but man, when you get them mad, and they don't win a lot of votes, but it was always funny to watch Rand Paul and Tulsi Gabbard and Mike Lee, three people who probably don't like each other a whole lot, being like, I got the same question.
Yeah. Well, I remember, I don't know if you remember Josh McCoon.
Oh, I love McCoon.
And him and Vincent Fort, him and Vincent Fort were on the same side about the JQC, the Judicial Qualifications Committee. Commission. They were basically a few years ago trying to water it down, which they ended up doing. But they were, you know, fighting against it. And then the two of them and another fellow were driving around to different places. I would have liked to have been a fly in the car listening to the two of them, because they were literally on the absolute. It was kind of what they call it, the U syndrome, that it basically, if you go so far left and so far right, you end up being around.
You're the same.
The same, right. But anyway, yeah, I like both those guys, and for different reasons, but one of them is kind of for the same reason. They say what they think, and they're not wishy-washy.
One of the things that I think we probably, to the point that I just sit here, like, you know, it'd be funny to be on different teams and then find issue or issues. They're unlikely teammates. You have covered tax subsidies for a great deal, and I appreciate that you write about it, because you're one of the guys. I had one of the big problems in Metro Atlanta, specifically in Fulton County, are development authorities. And I think that it is better than it was 2 years ago. I will be the first person to raise my hand and be like, it's definitely a more equitable process than it used to be. But I remembered Don Bolia, who was the lobbyist for the city of Alpharetta at the time. We wanted to drop a bill that said that the cities had to opt in to a tax abatement or give the three different things. And it got dropped in the state house by Chuck Martin and Jan Jones. And it was like a preclusive bill, because they will defend the city's rights to govern because they're not Fulton County. I remembered the development authorities and their special interest group from all over the state of Georgia were like, you can't do this. And they all came out of the woodwork, and I remember reading some of the pushback, and I was like, how could anybody fundamentally disagree with the fact that an entity, a school board or a city or a county, should opt into the tax abatement process rather than, if one writes it, they all just go along and whoever gets it, gets it, is still something that should be corrected from a subsidy perspective. And I say that as a crony capitalist.
Right.
I support, you've covered the Battery. And right. The Atlanta Braves, I don't know that I disagreed with, not that you wrote anything that was factually inaccurate. I actually think if you walk around the Battery and you realize that they will skip the part about if the city or the state or the county or the state kicked in money, that's a whole separate issue. But on tax abatements, it's like, well, why do the Atlanta Braves need a tax break to move their stadium to Cobb County? To me, there's ancillary value in your consumption-based sales tax, the jobs that you create, the fact that they'll be here for at least 30 years, that supersedes what you give up today and tomorrow.
Right.
And that is here. And that is not to say that anything you write or how you feel is wrong. I just thought that there was the same amount of value, in the same way that when you look at Fulton County doing a tax abatement deal for Avalon, it was a mud hole. And they sought a tax abatement from the Fulton County Development Authority. Like, you can't drive up to Alpharetta and look at Avalon today and be like, that was a really, really bad idea.
Oh, it was a good idea, but if it was such a good idea,
wouldn't it have worked?
Why do you need to take money from other people to build it? And I've heard the argument.
And I'll give you that there is political math.
Oh, well, and basically, for a long while with the Fulton County Tax Authority, Development
Horrible.
Authority, all you had to do as a developer was fog a mirror, and you were picking one up. And it was expected. That was the thing. I mean, they were building apartments, luxury apartments with it. And if you're building luxury apartments with it, you've basically, the sound you're hearing is that whole idea hitting the bottom, because it's not like, for instance, like the Kia plant or things like that. The argument is, well, Alabama will get it if we don't give them money.
Correct.
Or you South see with Carolina.
Q sells this week. I am sure they are coming with state funding and a tax abatement from Whitfield County.
So now it's gotten to the point where everyone expects it.
Sure.
I mean, the film industry here probably gets the best gig, right? They're like paid to do. But, like, you know, it was easy to beat up on Fulton because they.
Oh, it was horrible.
Because, you know, they were funding buildings in Midtown. In Buckhead and on the Beltline. You know, I think one time they were going to fund one on the Beltline right behind the old Sears building, Pond City Market.
Yeah.
And there couldn't have been any hotter terra firma in Atlanta, right? And so why should there be an abatement for that?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the places that, and I don't know that you've ever gotten here, but the biggest problem to me, you live in Decatur.
Right, DeKalb.
DeKalb. I live in Alpharetta. One of the biggest problems, Brookhaven is one that DeKalb County has a development authority, Fulton County has a development authority, and all the little tiny cities have development authorities. Mm-hmm. The biggest problem with that whole conversation, that why people need to opt in to a tax abatement deal and forego revenue in a collective hearing, is because one time when I was on the city council in Alpharetta, caught wind that Fulton County was going to do a development authority deal in Alpharetta, which would have left the city with 100% of nothing.
Right.
And I suggested to the developer, I said, if you do that and you take all the tax money from the municipality that provides the law enforcement, provides the community development, provides the resources, and you give them 100% of nothing, I would not want to be a part of your next project, because 100% of zero is zero, and you screwing them is pound foolish for your tomorrow. And they looked and went to the Alpharetta Development Authority, and I don't know why they ultimately made the decision that they did. But the only reason, and elected officials have nothing to do with the development authorities on its face. I never impacted one. Didn't say a word because I didn't care. It's 100 miles of solid gold when you get up there. But you should never cut a tax abatement because you're worried that Fulton County will.
Right.
And that to me is that should absolutely happen tomorrow, that nobody should fundamentally disagree with, because you shouldn't have a municipality granting a tax abatement through its development authority out of fear that somebody else is going to. And that is 100% the case with all the municipalities in Fulton and DeKalb.
Oh, yeah. Developers go shop the authorities, right? So,
and I think that it is a fundamental change that they ought to fix this year. Neither one of those parties should disagree, because I wouldn't want to sit on the Fulton County Development Authority and be like, well, we're going to collect $200,000 in fees writing these bonds, or we're going to get nothing for essentially 10 years. And it's not nothing, but it's essentially a disproportionate deal. We might as well do it. Like, that is the wrong way to govern.
Right.
In the state.
And when were you on Alpharetta's board?
2018 to 2021. I was never on the development authority.
But you were on the city council.
Finished in 2021.
Okay.
But you write critically, and to your credit, I think you are the one guy that has probably deserves as much credit as anybody about forcing Fulton County to stop.
Scott Truby, a reporter and now editor at the paper, did a lot of that. In fact, the way I describe my job is I kind of sweep up after the news. The others, like Truby, had written a lot of stories about it. I'm able to kind of come in and write a lot about it and then use three or four jokes in it, you know, which.
But you've seen it clean up considerably since the paper started writing about it. And there are plenty of things that I can always say I dislike about the AJC for X, Y, and Z, because that's a game everybody plays. I'm not happy you covered this that way. I mean, you talk to Bluestein about it regularly.
Yeah. Well, people have been hating us since the 1800s.
But you don't. What I would say is that there's still a really, really, really big service that you provide to local governments, and that was one. Because if you guys hadn't covered that issue, Mike Looney, who is the superintendent of the Fulton County School Systems, wouldn't be involved in that development authority today, and he is the most impacted man by every tax subsidy that every municipality
every school or county
does. And he deserves a seat at that table.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Bodker, who was the mayor of Johns Creek for a long time, who didn't, to their credit, did not have a tax abatement authority in Johns Creek. He sits on there, but I'm glad that he is in that role to protect municipalities, because he will.
Right.
And I think that that matters. And I think you do a tremendous service. So looking forward into the spring, you got any stories that are just like waiting to be written you want to tease?
A lot of those kind of seem to rot. Although effective government running smoothly is you know, boring for my job. So,
well, I'll tell you, I think the one thing, I've talked about it on the Sunday radio show, the Georgia Home Builders Association and the Atlanta Apartment Association have convinced building zoning laws, and I would like to see housing more affordable. And I heard that, and I thought they got him.
Yeah.
I don't say that in a fond way. I say that in a way that you move somewhere for a reason and you like the value system of the community that you lived in. And you talk about liberty loving. Like, why would you want, why would I invest $4 million in a house in Alpharetta or Johns Creek or Milton or Roswell or Brookhaven or Woodstock? And why would I, Governor Kemp, want to take the rights of the next door neighbor so that they can build something that the community doesn't necessarily want, that the city council wouldn't want them to degrade the value of the product? Because you invest money to bury utilities, you invest money to build wide sidewalks, you invest all kinds of money to make that city aspirational, and that city can be wherever. And when I hear Republicans talk about taking away local control, that is an issue that he's going to bring forward. And I don't think he knows the meaning of the word getting kicked in the teeth.
Yeah.
That when you start to piss off people in places where you candidly voted, you can build all the affordable housing you want where it's affordable to build. And you give tax subsidies for timber like we voted on in November, and nobody seemed to have an issue with it, but it never ends. And it's a dog chasing a car.
Well, that's local control. Everyone loves it until they don't, right? Until there's a reason.
Yeah, but then they move.
Right. It is a twist in the way they think when they do things like that, because, I mean, that's part of the whole Republican
mantra
is the local control. Government is best when it's smallest and
closest to the people. I've heard it a million times when they're running for office.
Right. except when it isn't. Yeah.
I don't think he knows when and that's one I think you ought to look at, because if you interviewed Larry Hansen, who runs the Georgia Municipal Association,
right,
who I don't know, but I feel like is in relative lockstep with a lot of Governor Kemp's agenda, he's about to learn that that organization has 500 members. Most of them want to govern those cities like they want. And the counties have 152 county members. And when you get Brookhaven to agree with College Park, man, you don't ever want to get to a place where you make everybody mad.
Yeah.
And that is a hole he may very, I think he's going to step in it. And I don't think he understands the unintended consequences of what he's doing.
Well, I think a lot of those mayors, council people, and of course the municipal association are going to be working the state reps, right? They're, because I guess they're the closest to the people, so to speak.
The next level up.
And right. So I think a lot of them will be here about it. You'll just see how much they flex their muscle. And then, of course, you have a new speaker there. So that'll be kind of interesting how much she flexes.
Well, what's going to be interesting is that he, John Burns, was one of the, it was House Resolution 146. It came forward last year. It came forward the year before. You don't really sponsor bills as a speaker. His name was on the bill when he was not. So I don't wonder about, and it's, they always shroud it in something that sounds great. Like, you know, it doesn't matter what's actually in the 400 pages of the bill. It's
the
House resolution to make housing more affordable.
Oh yeah. But that's the way it's always done. You know, I mean, it's the bill that says the Aren't Puppies Great bill or something, you know, this will save the kids bill.
I do feel like pointing out one of my favorite things that you do is that you call it both ways, because there's hypocrisy in all of it. And it's like, you know, I like local control until you're mad at your locals. I think you do a really good job of calling balls and strikes both ways. And that's not something you see everybody do, especially when you get into political season. So I, for one, appreciate your objectivity, even when I disagree, because I know you're not a brokered opinion.
Well, you know, I mean, part of it is I get a lot of pushback saying, boy, you're always beating up the Republicans in the state house or in the state government.
You should.
Well, it's hard to beat up the Democrats because they don't have anything to do.
They don't have any power.
Right. So that's, you know, I mean, ask, you know, the Democrats who run some of the cities and counties, then, you know, they have power, and then you can actually take a hard look at them, you know, whether it be Cobb or DeKalb or Atlanta. And so that's it. I just kind of look at who actually has the wherewithal to make decisions and to push stuff through, and then they're the ones who need to be looked at.
That conversation in Georgia is going to change over the next 5 or 6 years. I think it's the last time the Republicans really have the ability to just draw the districts like they want them to look.
We'll see. I mean, and you know, because we've been hearing that. I did a story after the last election, and there was a thought, wow, the Democrats did good, except in Georgia, obviously. They lost badly, you know, from Stacey Abrams all the way down to the labor commissioner. And it was the same as 2014. I mean, almost exactly. And I remember 2014, everyone was excited, you know, that Jason Carter and Michelle Nunn, was it, you know, all those were going to, you know, do something, and they got hammered.
Well, if I'm just a step back pundit, I think that you have seen a lot of, you saw Illinois, New York lose congressional seats in the last census. And that's not because they're growing. That's right. Because other places are in right to work states. And that is for various reasons. People didn't want to be mask mandated forever. And there's a whole litany of reasons why states grew. But if they're moving from northern states to southern states, very few of them leave their ideology at home. Like, they bring it with them. They don't change as people. Yeah. You like it here.
Maybe they do grow older, right?
Well,
that's, you know, I mean, Florida, right? It used to be kind of a 50-50 state, and now it's a...
Some of that's the leadership at the top.
64, you know, yeah, right. But a lot of those, you know, I think a couple of those seats, the congressional seats, ended up in Florida, right?
Yeah, so, no question. Right. And I said that to say that one day... It's all a circle. We've talked about it to this point. If you're on the left or the right, eventually you get to you. You have a full understanding that if the Republicans had quote-unquote momentum in 2022, and it turned out, I don't care how you feel, unless you were in Florida, it wasn't as much momentum as you probably thought. But one day that conversation shifts, and times are hard when the right is the party or parties in power for your different chambers of Congress and your legislatures. And then you kind of see where Georgia has settled with some of the growth that it has had. I don't think you can make a decision in 2 years after a pandemic. I think you can make a fundamental decision in 10. So, right.
Well, and of course, not all the growth, but, you know, vast majority of growth is in the metro area, right? And Georgia has historically been ruled by the rural areas. I mean, the whole going back to the county unit system and all that. And in fact, the county unit system back in the 60s with the U.S. Supreme Court, it brought up the one man, one rule vote. So now a lot of those areas have just been hanging on to that power that they have. I mean, and it wasn't long ago, I think maybe 5-6 years ago, I did a story about who has power in the state legislature, and I did the rural versus urban heads of committees in the Senate and House. And the Senate and House committees were largely still ruled by rural legislatures.
They hate it.
Well, it's just anything they can do to...
And I think the affordable housing bill is a part of that. Housing is affordable if you go to rural parts of the state of Georgia.
Sure.
Because they don't have municipal zoning laws that are worth a shit.
Well, and it's also supply and demand, right? Supply is people wanting to move to the metro area and or demand, and then the supply there is a lot of people have left.
Well, and you saw it too, whatever, in the last 5 years when they have come through with small cell bills for 5G, and they said, we're going to have a rural broadband bill, and we're going to drive all this internet access into rural parts of the state. And they have driven some access for internet access into rural parts of the state. But they did that because the carriers didn't want to deal with the municipalities and the counties in metro Atlanta because they wanted to put a telephone pole where they didn't care about what the city looked like. They cared about the P&L sheet to a shareholder. And the rural Republican legislators in Georgia did that to Metro Atlanta because they could.
Yeah, and they like to do it.
And I think that the great thing about the growth in the state of Georgia is that it is outside of the port of Savannah, an inland port in North Georgia. It's here. Mm-hmm. And the power is coming back. I don't disagree with affordable housing initiatives. I've given Andre Dickens an immense amount of credit. If that's the values of your community, there are ways to do it, and you should have the ability to make that decision. It shouldn't necessarily be Governor Kemp.
Right.
If you want to bond it and cut the deals with the developers and you want to kick in money and the voters go vote for those bonds, I'm all in favor because I'm an absolutist with it. And even though I would lose an election in the city of Atlanta, I'll defend their right to run how they want to be run because they don't have to have the same values of Decatur or Doraville or Chamblee. You pick and choose where you want to live based on the values of the community when you start looking at houses. That, to me, is the most conservative part of the state legislature. Everybody's favorite day in local government is the day that the 40 days of the General Assembly is over.
Right.
Because they can't do any more damage to you.
Yeah, that's guard your wallets, folks.
Well, Bill Torpy, thanks for stopping in this week to talk with me on the Ben Burnett Show. I'm really grateful to have you, sir.
No, I appreciate you having me here.
Yeah, we'll see you next week, everybody. Have a great day.
Spring is here and baseball is back. You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.